It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, it's Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me is 95% always is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And David Brown is back.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
I don't think you've been here since we talked about the Muppets.
I was going to say my thought would be the Muppet cast.
Yeah, that was the last one.
I think that was before the ABC show. It wasn't even...
It was.
I think you had that internship, or you had...
Yes.
Yes.
I was talking about the internship,
but I think you were talking post, like in the past, like I had this internship. I don't think you currently had it.
Well, yeah, because I had the internship when I was an undergrad.
Right.
Yeah.
Now you're a fancy lawyer in D.C.
Well, yeah. Fancies.
So if you want to listen to that podcast, you can just pause this and then go.
Yeah, go listen to it. It was good. A lot of interesting information.
comics.blogspot.com.
We have every episode.
There's no reason to repeat it.
And that had three-fourths Browns.
It was. It was surrounded by Browns.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Lisa was there, too.
Yeah.
She was.
Michael's the only Brown that hasn't been here. I mean, not the only Brown. I have a big family, but like the core, the four of us.
Yeah.
Go Browns.
Yeah. My dad's been on, but your dad hasn't yet.
No. I keep talking to my dad about it, and he seems to like forget every time I mention it that I do a podcast every week.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, "And you want me to do a what?" I'm like, "Dad, I want you to be on the podcast I do every week." He's like, "Whoa, that's a podcast." I'm like, "It's like a radio show that like we record and then release once a week." He's like, "Oh."
How many times have you had this conversation?
Like more than I should have. You know what I mean? It's like to the point where you should know what a podcast is and he should know that I do it every week.
Yeah.
And he's just like clueless about it. It's adorable.
I think my dad just liked that he had a microphone.
Yeah.
I don't think he really cared if anyone was going to hear it.
Yeah.
He just liked the fact that his thoughts were being recorded.
Yeah, but that's the only reason I'm doing this show. I don't give a fuck if anyone's listening. It's just like, am I recorded for posterity? Great.
Yeah, that's why.
I just like the sound of my own voice.
That's why you're not reposting things on Twitter.
Well, I don't have a Twitter. But hey, I posted on the page this week.
You did. I was
twice. I posted twice, John.
Yeah, I had a crazy week. I was in San Francisco, so we did the podcast before I left. So you actually posted news, which I found out.
And I don't even know what I posted.
You posted that the Shocker is in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh yeah, that was
which
cool.
It looked really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That none of that is our topic today.
Although I will say in preparation for Greatest Thing in the World, I was going to reread Astonishing X-Men, and then I dropped it on my toe.
Yeah.
So, I wasn't sure if I could walk today.
You should post a picture of your fucked up looking toe. It's all mangled and
blue. I feel like we would lose followers by doing that.
Yeah, let's just
start posting pictures of our feet online. That'll get us. You know what? It'll get us a weird type of follower.
Yeah, it's somebody who's not interested in comics at all.
Right.
It's like, talk more about your feet. I have unfollowed people who have showed me their injuries.
Yeah.
Like, unwarranted.
All right, so let's not do that.
No.
But our topic this week, speaking of my dad was the guy who lent me the Harry Potter books before the first movie came out. He was also the guy that gave me, I have his editions of Lord of the Rings, so he's a heavy prose reader.
Yeah.
So most of the sci-fi and fantasy.
I have a question.
If there's no pictures to it, he got me into it.
All right, so yeah. Harry Potter came out in 97-ish?
The original?
The first book.
The very first book? Yeah, it came out in the 90s.
All right.
Late 90s.
So you were, John, you had a big boy job.
I was a grown person.
You're a grown person.
I read it in 2000. So there were three books out, but the first film hadn't come out yet.
Right. And your dad read them. He read them first, and then he said, "Hey, I read these books. You should check them out."
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just trying to get some context here.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
okay.
Because he reads everything.
Oh, yeah. No, I know your dad's an avid reader.
He's the kind of guy that has six books on his nightstand and it takes him 3 years to finish any one of them, but he's reading constantly.
All of them at the same time.
Yeah, and I'd heard a lot of good things about it. And I remember there were a couple of years where I was like, okay, kids are into this. I kind of have the same feeling about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I was like, all right, a lot of people are into it. I don't really see my way into it.
Yeah.
And then once I started, I thought it was great.
And then, David, I don't remember anything. Did we read them? Like, we meaning you. Did you read them when they originally
Well, actually, the reason that we started reading them was because Mom and Grandma were at Walden Books throwback.
Wow, that existed.
Yeah.
Wait, is that not a thing anymore?
Hasn't been for a minute.
Did they close before Borders?
Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah.
I remember when I grew up, the mall had Barnes & Noble and Walden Books, Jesus. And we could comparison shop.
Yeah.
Because I had a dad who was an avid reader, so every time we went to the mall, my mom would go clothes shopping. My dad would take me to Walden Books, Barnes & Noble, and KB, which also
KB
doesn't
Toys
exist.
Is a great star.
KB was like your price comparison for Toys R Us.
Yeah.
They were always like a little more expensive, but they usually had stuff that Toys R Us didn't have.
It's a good shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they were at Walden Books, and Grandma pointed to Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone and said, oh, we should get that book for David.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's like, oh, that looks like it might be good. And Mom just said, oh, no, that's just some stupid kid's book.
Yeah.
And then Grandma got it anyway, and then, you know.
That started it.
And then, yeah, that all.
Yeah, because we, this is what's interesting. I've talked about this with people at the store probably when this new book came out, or I don't know, somehow this shit comes up. And we were saying what's cool about Harry Potter is for like our generation or whatever. I don't know what generation we are, but we...
You guys are millennials.
You
unfortunately.
Know, yeah, unfortunately. But what I mean is like we read Harry Potter, and as those books were coming out, we kind of grew up with Harry Potter. Do you know what I mean? Like he was kind of the same age
right,
we were.
Right, because those books get older.
Right.
As he gets older, and I've had the opposite happen where I was introducing it to Ben.
Yeah.
And he never, just the movies. We haven't read them yet. And although with fourth grade, they were talking about like what he should read. And I'm like, you really should start reading Harry Potter.
Yeah.
He's never finished the movies because the last couple movies, he's like, yeah, they're kind of boring. I don't get it. And I'm like, yeah, they're kind of aimed at a 15-year-old.
Yeah.
You're actually not old enough for the last couple of Harry Potter books, which you guys didn't have to worry about because you were waiting for them to be released.
Right. And I remember like all the launch parties and all that stuff, and people were pre-ordering the stuff and all the crazy lines you saw. And it was like a big, big deal when those books came out. But it was interesting that it was something, and this is like what we were talking about the shop, is like we grew up with them. So you kind of aged with Harry and Hermione and everybody. And then now it's something where they're already set up where it's just like that next generation can just come in and be like, all right, you're 8 years old or 10 years old or whatever it is. Here's the first Harry Potter book. And then, but kids are just like flying through them now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we had the nice where it's like I remember we were like, I probably started reading them by the time the fourth book came out or maybe the fifth. I don't know.
The fourth. Yeah.
And that's when I started reading them because everyone in the house is reading them. Like my grandma was reading them and listening to the audiobooks. David and Lisa were reading them.
The audiobooks are really good. My dad
They're
actually.
Great. Tim, yeah. What's that guy's name?
Jim Dale.
Yeah. He's phenomenal. My dad actually turned us on to the audiobooks.
Yeah.
And we were at a wedding in Nashville and we were passing the audiobooks back and forth because we all drove from New York to Nashville.
Yeah.
So we did Order of the Phoenix.
I still have all the audiobooks on my phone.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yep. And they're really
good.
I have
all the audiobooks of Lord of the Rings in my phone, but I don't have Harry Potter.
Yeah, Harry Potter's good, and it's because of that guy.
It's not as good, but he's good.
Jim Dale.
Yeah. Because he does the voices of like all the different characters, and it's like, to me, those books are more, or the audiobooks are more of like the voices I hear in my head when I'm reading the books than the movie characters.
Yeah, and I think that's the reason, and we'll get into it in depth, but I haven't read the new book yet because Audible doesn't have an audio version. And since it's a screenplay, I'm like, I would like Jim Dale just to do a radio play for me. And it doesn't seem to be available yet. And I've run into it a few times. Even in the airport coming back from San Francisco, I went to Half Price Books yesterday and got rid of some old DVDs and saw it. And I keep wanting to pick it up because I definitely want to read the next part.
Yeah.
But part of me is holding out. I'm like, I just want somebody to read it to me.
Right. Especially because it's like written like a play. And this is kind of why I haven't read it. Like my roommates got the book and they read it. And I didn't really talk to him about what it was. And David, you've read it.
I have.
And not a, what's the verdict here?
I don't, I'm not a big fan. Truth be told.
Don't like it.
Now, when you say not a big fan, is it feel like one of the lesser books to you, or does it feel like the franchise is taking a turn that you don't want to go to?
I actually don't even fully consider it canon, because while Joe Rowling was responsible for the story, like she's credited as like story by, she didn't write it. It was written by, hold on, I wrote down his name in case I forgot.
I love when people do notes.
Jack Thorne.
So he actually, who is she gave him the concept, and then he did all like the dialogue and the pacing and all that stuff.
And that's not the screenwriter from the movies who worked really closely with
But I also really don't like the screenwriter from the movies or the producers, but the movies are a different issue. No, this, so this guy is Jack Thorne, and, you know, I don't know for sure. I'm sure Rowling had some influence on the dialogue itself, but it, to me, doesn't read as though she wrote it. It feels very different.
That's interesting. Like I said, I haven't read it, but what you're saying, and I'm probably going to bring up a comparison that you may not have read, but that sounds to me like Dark Knight 3, where it's like story by Frank Miller, but it's Brian Azzarello writing it. And,
and it's not really...
It's a good book, but it doesn't feel like
it doesn't
those
fit
other
in
books.
With the other two.
Is that how
you feel? Yeah, so this is certainly the same characters, and it takes some of the same stories. You know, it picks up... Act one of the play picks up where... It is the epilogue. I mean, it's the epilogue.
So it's that exact
seven.
Same timeline. When we jump ahead to where they're adults and they have children that are just going to Hogwarts.
Right, 19 years ahead. Okay. It's set there. That's where Act One opens. And then it kind of skips through a couple more years. And, you know, it deals with the same characters and, you know, a lot of it.
And it all takes place at, like, Hogwarts?
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't even sure it was at Hogwarts. I thought it was going to be following Harry through London.
No, it doesn't follow Harry. It follows his son Albus.
Because it's like his kids in school, right?
Right, in school, but also not in school. And it really is like this time turner travel adventure that's really strained.
Hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing, that time thing they did, and I know it's in the books. As soon as you put time travel into anything, it really
makes things complicated.
Kind of complicates things, but kind of takes over the story where it's like that then becomes the solution for any problem. It's really difficult.
Or you're spending all your time just trying to figure out the mechanics of it. I mean, there are entire podcasts devoted to figuring out what's going on in Doctor Who because Doctor Who's about time travel.
Right.
So it's very hard to follow.
I mean, you can do an entire show on like the time paradoxes of like the Back to the Future movies where it's like, all right, if Doc Brown gets shot back in the Wild West, how does he do this? It's like this whole mess. And
that was one of the things I thought was brilliant about Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure was it was the first time travel story I ever seen where they would do paradoxes. That whole point in Act 3, like, we got to remember to put a garbage can here. And then a garbage can would fall on the guy.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, that was the stuff where I was like, oh, time travel isn't just going to a different location.
Yeah.
An era. You can do things that completely change your narrative.
Yeah.
Doctor Who does a ton of that. But you're right. Once you bring that in.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like when they do the time turner thing in the movie, that's like the last time I saw it. I mean, I remember it from the book. It's like, Why don't we just go back in time and save Harry's parents and kill Voldemort before he becomes like this crazy, powerful idiot? You know what I mean?
And that's one of the issues that I have with this story. You know, back in book three is when the time turner was introduced and used. And that was Prisoner of Azkaban. And Harry and Hermione, you know, used it in a limited way. They went back a couple of hours. Also, spoilers, I guess. But if you haven't read Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, then you just need to
stop
listening and go read a book.
The movie is 12 years old.
Right. Yeah.
You can give spoilers.
So, you know, they travel back in time and then they, you know, save Buckbeak and then use Buckbeak to save Sirius. And the way that they do it, I think that Jo did it when, you know, she wrote it, I thought was very well done because it was very subtle. And the way that it was told, and I'm sure somebody on the internet has thought about this more than I do, or more than I have, and then they'll disprove me in some way, but it was like they were very apart from it. They didn't really interact all that much with what was going on. They stayed in the background when they went back in time. And it was vague enough that it was believable. So,
and it was believable both ways. Like the first, re-experience that scene, whether you read it or watch the film again, when you see it the first time, you can see the future versions are affecting it rather than, okay, now it's an alternate timeline.
Yeah.
Right. And they, you know, that all worked for me. It was limited going back in time. Like, okay, they can only go back a couple hours. So that's why they didn't go back to save Harry's parents.
Yeah.
Well, what's rough and stupid, really, if I'm just going to be honest, about Harry Potter and the Cursed Child is they take a time turner, Albus, and his friend Scorpius, who, by the way, is the only he's the best character in the new story.
Who
the,
is he?
Scorpius is Draco Malfoy's son.
Okay.
And he and Albus Potter become friends on the Hogwarts Express.
Okay.
And that character, as written, was fantastic. He had the best lines. He had, I think, the most depth. That was a strength in the book for sure. And I guess the actor that is playing Scorpius on the stage in London is supposed to be really phenomenal.
Yeah.
And he's getting, like, he's stealing all the...
Getting, like, rave reviews.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at any rate, in the story, what they did is they basically steal a time turner from Hermione's office in a really stupid way. Like, Hermione, you're the Minister of Magic, and you
Wait,
hit a time
out. Hermione is the Minister of Magic?
She is.
That's yes. crazy. So she's like the... Like, who is the guy?
Cornelius Fudge.
Yeah. Okay, she has his job.
Yes.
Okay.
And so they...
kind of like Barbara Gordon being the commissioner in Batman Beyond.
Yeah.
I feel like this podcast, I'm just going to be drawing parallels
to Batman.
Well, because I haven't read this yet.
Right.
And to be fair, Stephen predicted that that's what you would do.
You got to tie it back to Batman.
There's a lot of Batman out there.
Right. There's like two, in your defense, there is.
There's been two Batman stories every week since 1939.
Right. So at any rate, Albus and Scorpius break in, steal the time turner, and they use the time turner to go back in time to save Cedric Diggory, who...
What?
Yes.
All right, hang on a second.
Yes, exactly.
All right, they don't know that guy.
So, all right, well, so what happened was Harry is visited by Cedric's father,
okay.
who is like... very old and dying and still hates Harry for being quote-unquote responsible for Cedric's death.
Sure, right.
So Amos Diggory is in Harry's kitchen when Harry's an adult, and he's basically saying, like, I heard, you know, rumor is they found a time turner. You should use this to go save my son. And Harry feels bad, but he's like, no, can't do it, sorry. And Albus overhears this, and then he decides, oh, I'm going to go back and save Cedric Diggory, and I'm going to do what my father can't, because he's got a complex, because his father's Harry Potter, and he's Albus, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So they steal this time turner, and then they go back to what is 1994, and try to save Cedric Diggory.
Okay.
So Wait, already, just... I have a problem, because why are you going all the way back? You can't, why are you going back that far?
Well, also, if we're talking about time travel, I guess we can get lost in the weeds of time. Is 90 the first book is published in 97, so are they then saying that the books are set a little further
the books
back?
Were set yes
like
so,
like 90 to 97
91 to 97
okay
that's when the books happen
that's yeah that's when the events of the books occurred.
Is that just like what J.K. Rowling says?
Yeah.
Okay,
so then this takes place in like 2005 if it's 19 so, years after
19 years after 1997
would be 2006.
Well, wouldn't it?
No, wait. No,
hold on, wait. It would actually
it'll
be.
It'd be this year.
There's too much math on this podcast.
It's not a math cast.
Well, I don't want to listen to a math cast.
I think it would actually be. It would actually be 19 years after 1998 because the battle of it was 19 years after the Battle of Hogwarts.
Okay.
And the Battle of Hogwarts happened in May of 1998 because it was this 97-98 school year. If I'm right, you know who would know this? Rose would know this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's probably, if and when she listens to this, she's going to be yelling.
Screaming at the...
So the Battle of Hogwarts came out at the same time as the first X-Files movie. Those two things were happening at once.
There you go. So question. All right. So if this new play takes place in, like, say, 2016, just for argument's sake, does Harry Potter have a smartphone?
No. He's a wizard. Electronics don't work because there's too much magic. Oh. If they're around a lot of magic, they malfunction.
Science.
Okay. All right. It's also... So,
no science.
No science. Magic.
She blinded me with no science.
So, all right. So they want to go back and save Cedric Diggory because reasons.
Right. Because, yeah, Albus has a complex about being Harry Potter's son. And so they go back and they try to save him. So they go back to the first task and they... dress as Durmstrang students, and then they mess up Cedric during the first task, which for
what's the first
call
was that where they go into the pond?
No, that's the second task.
Oh.
First task is when they had to get the golden egg from the dragon.
Okay.
So they mess up Cedric's chances there. he loses, he's humiliated, and they can only go back also for like seconds. I mean, they're back for literally only a few moments. And so they mess him up, and all of a sudden then they're pulled back to the present, and the present is totally different. So it's kind of like a sound of
the Planet of the Apes,
Sound of Thunder. Wasn't that, no, is that what it's called? Where the guy steps on the butterfly and then
Butterfly Effect.
Yeah, it's the Butterfly Effect, and it's the, was Rafe Faulkner story? I don't know.
Fine, no.
Anyway.
Jeff Goldblum talks about butterflies in Jurassic Park.
So at any rate, it's basically that. So then they come back, and all of a sudden they're in this alternate reality where things panned out differently because Cedric lost the first task. He was humiliated. He then became a Death Eater, and then he killed Neville Longbottom.
What?
Right. Yeah. Right. And so then they like follow this through for a little while, and Scorpius and Albus, maybe, I don't remember if Albus is alive at this point or if he died. It gets dicey because now it's, you know, Harry didn't win. He lost. And so, you know, he didn't defeat Voldemort because Neville wasn't there to kill Nagini during the Battle of Hogwarts. And so Voldemort lived, Harry dies, and Albus Potter doesn't exist. And so now Scorpius is there, and then he tries to use the time turner again to go back to the second task, and it just
it's the Harry Potter Age of Apocalypse.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely sounds like kind of a hot mess of a time travel story, and
yes.
Harry Potter doesn't, there's enough to do without having to do time travel and Harry Potter. Time travel is such a broad topic. Right. You're either a time travel story or you're a Harry Potter story. You shouldn't be both. You can have time travel in a Harry Potter story, but you can't make the whole thing about time travel.
Right, and especially for a fandom that is as obsessive as the Harry Potter fandom
is. With, like, details and shit.
Right.
Yeah.
You are messing with too much.
Well, yeah. You're also messing with the timeline. Like, Star Trek has done a lot of time travel episodes, but they don't really do, other than the J.J. Abrams films, really, they don't do stories in their own timeline. Like,
right,
they go back to the 20th years. Century.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that does seem really gawky.
And that's weird, because, I don't know.
How are they doing this on stage? Because this sounds like a movie.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like fan fiction.
It sounds like a bad fan fiction movie of Harry Potter.
But it's so, like, the plot is so complicated. I mean, when you think of a play, you think that it's dialogue driven, that it's mainly characters talking to each other. It's not a lot of locations.
Right.
It's certainly not a lot of effects. And David, what you're describing is like this, like just the ninth bad sequel to Harry Potter when no one originally is doing it.
Yeah.
And they, you know,
like half the X-Men, it's like X-Men Apocalypse of Harry Potter.
It's like a bad.
And the final major scene, you know, like the climax of the play, basically Harry, Ron, Hermione, Ginny, Albus, and Scorpius, maybe there are other people, essentially travel back to the, you know, October 31st, 1980, the night Lily and James were killed. They time travel back to Godric's Jesus. Hollow. Yeah, yeah. So that they can stop, wait for it, the love child of Voldemort and Bellatrix Lestrange.
Who didn't exist before, right?
Who?
The love child of...
Yeah, the love child didn't exist, or at least was never acknowledged. But all of a sudden, there's this love child of them who also time traveled.
Oh, my God.
So that she could save Voldemort by telling him not to kill Harry. And so what they do is they have to stop Voldemort's daughter, Delphi, from interceding with Voldemort and stopping him. And then they have to, like, overhear, even though they're in a church and Harry's parents are in the cottage that's not really near the church.
Magic.
Whatever. Magic. Harry has to basically essentially be present as an adult for the death of his parents.
What?
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, okay. How's this play doing in London?
The thing is, the play is doing well, and I think that's a credit to the actors.
All right, but is the play doing well because it's a good play, or is the play doing well because it's a Harry Potter play?
I think it's too early to tell at this point, because it's not a movie where everybody can see it where they are.
Yeah.
Like it. You so when you, the... yeah, when you have a movie like Batman versus Superman, okay, it's all going to go back to Batman. But Batman versus Superman did very, very well opening weekend because everybody who was a fan of the franchise went.
Right.
This is in one theater on this planet.
Yeah.
So that, but that reviews. Opening weekend could be a year and a half.
Yeah.
And I think that, I don't know, the reviews have been positive. The New York Times liked it. But my guess is that the reviewer for the New York Times is not
like a Harry Potter fan
in the right. same way that I am. And I know a lot of the diehard fans that I know that have read the book were either underwhelmed or at best whelmed
Tina?
By it. Tina hasn't read it. And Rose? I really told her not to bother.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, I really just wouldn't.
Did your dad read it?
See, if I was that diehard, I actually haven't talked to him since it came out. Yeah. So I don't know. But yeah, if I was that diehard a Harry Potter fan, like the things that I am that diehard about, I will go see the bad stuff just to see like where they're going with the franchise. And okay, I disagree with it, but I want to know the concrete reasons why. You know, which is why I go to Batman versus Superman and X-Men Apocalypse.
But I think this is the thing we were talking about earlier, is like canon's this funny thing where, so you're saying you don't consider this canon because J.K. Rowling may have came up with the concept, but she didn't write it.
Right. At least I don't think she did.
Yeah.
I mean, I read the dialogue and it doesn't sound like her. And
yeah. Okay.
I mean, her writing style also just doesn't lend itself to a play.
No.
Because she's so description heavy and so adverb heavy.
Which is why the movies don't quite feel like the book.
Yeah, right. I mean, honestly, and also David Heyman.
I don't like the movies. They're not good. Those movies aren't great movies.
No, I think they got better as they went along.
I completely disagree.
Really?
I think the first one was the good one. And the second
one got
worse
as they went?
Oh, yeah.
Because
I thought they hit bottom. Like Goblet of Fire is a pretty bad movie. And then I thought from Order of Phoenix to the end, although I didn't think that last book needed to be two movies, I thought they got stronger. But I wouldn't consider any of them classics. I mean, they're certainly not Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe my issue is Lord of the Rings is a book I can't read. Meaning, like, it reads like a VCR manual. So
it's tough. And it's a pretty decent audiobook, though.
Yeah, maybe that's what I'll have to do at some point. But those made really good epic movies. The Lord of the Rings movies I'd watch. We try to watch them like every year for Thanksgiving because we're stupid. Like all in one shot. The Harry Potter
extended.
Yeah.
Nice.
Because why wouldn't you? We got that kind of time. And
you're gonna do it. Do it right.
Yeah. Remember all that free time we have.
Yeah.
But like the Harry Potter movies aren't like movies that I'd ever be like, yeah, let's do a Harry Potter movie marathon because. For a couple reasons. I don't think the movies are good, and then it's uncomfortable to watch Hermione grow up and turn into, like, a hot person when she's, like, a child in that one movie. Do you know what I mean? It's, like, it's very uncomfortable.
Yeah, but it's like watching The Professional again with...
That's also weird now.
Or Labyrinth.
Also,
I'm not really attracted to Jennifer Connelly.
Really?
Yeah, she's boring.
You gotta look at Jennifer Connelly in the 90s.
Yeah, boring white girl.
Well, also...
Rocketeer.
Dan Radcliffe's breathing...
Is that a thing?
You have a problem with the way an actor is breathing?
Well, when he breathes every word, I do.
Oh, and here's the thing. Daniel Radcliffe is a swell dude. I don't know him, obviously. but what I'm saying is I've seen him in interviews, and he's got good politics. He seems like a good guy. He kept his shit together growing up being Harry Potter. He's a terrible actor. Yeah. He's pretty awful.
Well, he hasn't done too much outside.
Right,
he's playing a corpse in...
Does he play a corpse?
Yeah, in this movie with Paul Dano.
Yeah, it's really the trailer.
And here's
weird.
The thing too.
I didn't even
want
to watch the trailer.
It's
weird.
He's a kid, right? They just had to get a kid to be Harry Potter. Once he's
They were lucky to pick those kids who continued to want to act.
Kept their shit together. None of them went nuts.
None of them went through puberty too hard. Ron Weasley maybe a little bit. I mean, Emma Watson became gorgeous.
Yeah.
But to the point where even JK was like, maybe I should have put Hermione and Harry together. Because everybody wanted that from the movie. It was a big bet in 2000 to go, these little kids are going to make seven movies.
Right, which turned into what, nine movies? Because they doubled two of them?
But now we have, which can be a whole side topic, now we have the spinoff movie.
What movie?
Fantastic Beasts.
That hasn't come out yet, right?
No.
That's like a winter
movie. It comes out in Thanksgiving or Christmas.
Yeah. And that's a thing that's confusing me so much about the franchise. Not to derail where you were going with Daniel Radcliffe.
Oh, I never know. I'm bad at.
Well, you're saying Daniel Radcliffe's no good. But
he just has this breathing thing. Watch the movies. He breathes every single word.
I'm never going to not notice it. You know what? I had a friend who just saw The Martian, and I was like, how is that movie? And I haven't seen The Martian yet. She goes, Matt Damon eats all the time. And she couldn't take the movie.
Because
it's
like,
just sounds of him eating
Brad
alone.
Brad Pitt in Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
He eats in every single scene he's in. It's like a weird thing in that movie. Yeah. Watch Ocean's 11. Okay. He's constantly eating like nachos or snacking on something. He's got like Snickers. He's always eating something.
Robert Downey Jr. does that a lot as Tony Stark.
Eating?
He's always walking around with snacks.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Avengers, he's like eating sunflower seeds like all the time.
Yeah. Huh.
But the weird thing about the franchise is we're at this point now where it's like it's splitting in two. Because when I heard about this book, my first reaction, which is still my reaction, is why isn't this the next movie? Why is it a play where everyone around the world, the millions of people that want to see more Harry Potter, have to get a ticket and go to London when Warner Brothers was dying for a movie so much that they're doing these spin-off movies that are just kind of in the same world? And as we said, Warner Brothers is going to push this new Harry Potter movie, which isn't a Harry Potter movie, which isn't about Albus. It isn't even about the Harry Potter lineage at all.
This new book, or the, I'm sorry, this new movie, the, what's it called?
Fantastic Beasts.
That's like in olden times. It's going to take place in like early 20th century.
Yeah. Because
it's a guy who wrote a book,
Newt
that's
Scamander,
a textbook for Harry Potter's school. Right?
Right.
Okay. So none of the characters, no one, Voldemort.
It exists in the world.
Totally. It's in the same universe.
Yeah.
But it's Voldemort and Dumbledore and all these characters won't even be born yet.
No. Voldemort is alive at this time. If it's early 20th century, Voldemort's alive. And Dumbledore is like in his 60s at least. I think the most that we would see, you will probably get a mention of Dumbledore.
Okay.
And
like Hogwarts will obviously be like a school that exists.
Right. Because it's existed for hundreds of years.
So once again, going to Batman, this is the Gotham
of
Harry Potter.
No, yeah, absolutely. It's Gotham. And all right, here's a question. J.K. Rowling, lovely lady. What does she do? Like, I'm just ignorant. I'm not trying to be like offensive. She doesn't write any more books.
Yes, she does.
She's still writing books.
Yeah.
What is she? But she's not writing Harry Potter books. She's writing like different books.
Yeah. So she, the first book that she published after she finished book seven was The Casual Vacancy, which is not, you know, it's just
a book.
Just a book. Not set in the Harry Potter universe.
Yeah.
And then she started writing under a pseudonym of Robert Galbraith. And she has their...
Is it because she's trying not to...
Well, initially, it was she wanted to publish a book that didn't get attention as J.K. Rowling's new book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so she published that book.
When she publishes
Cuckoo's
under
Calling.
A pseudonym and you know the pseudonym, doesn't that defeat the purpose of publishing under...
So that's what happened. So the book was published and about, I don't know exactly how long after it was published, but it had been published for a little while, maybe a couple months. And then it was leaked or something that this was actually J.K. Rowling's book. And she just published it under a pseudonym.
Yeah.
And so I actually remember that day when it was announced, because the first thing I did was go online, go on Barnes & Noble, and reserve a copy of the book.
Because it was going to fly out.
Because
sales were going to spike now.
Yeah. It was going to sell out immediately, and it was the first edition.
Yeah.
And I managed to get one, so I have the first edition of The Cuckoo's Calling, and so the dust jacket, the back page has a fake biography.
Huh.
For this author.
Yeah.
And says that he was like MI6 or something, or he was in like British Security Services or something along those lines. And it's this whole fake biography of this guy. Yes. And she still publishes those stories. It's a detective series.
Is she using her own name now?
No. It still says Robert Galbraith, but then in the back it says Robert Galbraith is a pseudonym for J.K. Rowling.
That's what Stephen King did early on. Stephen King's pseudonym was Richard Bachman. And for him, it wasn't because he was so popular. He was actually a young writer, but he was so prolific that the publishing companies were like, people don't really know you. They're not going to buy three books a year from you.
Yeah.
So he created a pseudonym called Richard Bachman.
Yeah.
And those books are still like this. I think today you can buy it. It says Richard Bachman, a pseudonym for Stephen King.
Oh, yeah. And it's, so it says on the book.
Yes. And everybody knows the Richard Bachman books are part of Stephen King's bibliography.
See, that's interesting because it's like, obviously she doesn't need any money because she has like a castle and she's filthy rich.
Well, and she's given most of it away. She has so much money.
Oh, totally. And good for her. Yeah. But I'm saying like, so she's not going to like write any more Harry Potter books?
I think she will. I mean, there was talk for a while and I don't know what the status is. It's been years since I've paid attention to what the status is of it, but I think at one point she was working on like an encyclopedia, like a Harry Potter type encyclopedia, which I think, you know, at least at some stage was going to be sort of this slightly organized mix of things that didn't make it in the book. So a bit more backstory for like Dean Thomas, who at one time was going to be part of the main trio. You know, there were going to be more than just the three of them that a group of friends. He was going to have a more prevalent role in the books, but that didn't end up panning out. And then there were other, you know, facts here or there that didn't make it into the books, or things that she's thought but didn't put into the books.
So would these be things that would be considered canon, or is it things she changed her mind on so it could possibly contradict what's happened in the books?
Well, I guess that kind of goes to how you would define canon, right? So for me, you know, my idea of canon is really if J.K. Rowling says that it is, then it is. I mean, she is effectively the creator of that universe.
Right.
So if she says it, boom, it exists.
Yeah.
And obviously, if she's letting this play and this movie happen,
right, then it seems to have her blessing, which
then it's
would
a
suggest
universe she's interested in continuing, which she didn't quite feel 9 years ago.
But she's pretty active on like Twitter and stuff. I mean, yeah, she's come out and talked about this play. She said, "Yeah, this is canon. This happened. This is
well." I don't
official.
Know that I don't know that she would go so far as to say it's canon. I think that she would say
it's like an adaptation of her ideas and characters.
Or
and
I think she would say it's up to the readers to determine for themselves. I mean, she's very much, you know, shares the stories in that sense, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, at least that's my impression. You know,
it seems like she's more focused than George Lucas was.
But there are
where when they started putting out all the expanded universe stuff, he's like, yeah, it all counts. And then when he wanted to make his own stuff,
and it kind
of was like, nah,
anything.
None of it counts because he didn't want anything to contradict him.
Yeah,
and he seemed like Lucas always had this ambivalent attitude towards Star Wars anyway, whereas like he kind of really wanted to make that one, you know, and then go do something else. But then it took over his life in a way where he resented it. And seemed like J.K. learns from his example and try to figure out a balance of...
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of where I come from is... I'm not really a huge George Lucas fan because I've watched interviews with him and fuck that guy. And, you know, whatever he did for Star Wars, much more talented people ran with that ball. With J.K. Rowling, though, it seems like she's kind of having a somewhat similar experience where she's like, trying to publish under a pseudonym so she can kind of see if the books have merit on their own. Do you know what I mean? It's like, all right, Harry Potter's this huge success. No matter what book this girl wants to publish, publishers are going to jump through fire to publish her next book.
And people are going
to
buy it.
If I was her, I would want, I get wanting to publish under a pseudonym because you want to see if the book is any good. Not because she wrote it. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, you know, for the same reasons that Dave Chappelle quit Chappelle Show. Because he got to a point where he was so successful, no one was telling him no.
Right.
And no one was going to tell him that something wasn't funny.
Right.
So he was like, you know what? I think this whole...
It got too big.
It got so big that when he was doing that final season, he was like, I don't know if any of this is good.
Yeah.
Because I can't trust anybody else's opinion.
Right. Everyone's just telling you how awesome you are all the time.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's like, and then you just kind of wonder, it's like, I do like the idea of her being like, well, it's up to you. You know, if you want it, it's canon. If not, you know, you're all intelligent people. Make up your own minds.
And
you
some
know?
People, you know, there are people out there who think unless it was published in the books itself, it's not canon. So, for example, I know that there were some in the fandom who lashed out at the revelation that Dumbledore was gay. That was never brought up in the books. It's not canon.
Yeah, but she just said it.
Right, she just said it. But to me, it's like, well, she said it.
It's a thing.
That is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she can't put literally everything about everybody in the book.
There's no one above her to come in and go, no, he's not.
And not
that
only
you would
that,
listen to.
Right.
It's like, if she mentioned it in the books, it would, it's like.
Then it seems forced.
It's forced. And it's just like, you don't need to know. It's like, it's not important that he is, but it's interesting that he is.
Yeah, it doesn't change anything.
It doesn't
about the
change
story.
Anything. Right. And I guess that's what I'm saying is that it doesn't have to be with this specifically, I guess, or anything she really kind of corrects. Like, the books are complete, they're done, and they're stories. Anything else that you add to it that doesn't service a story is useless, essentially, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, but it's interesting facts where, like, fans want to know all this stuff.
Like this encyclopedia you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah. And I think it's like, you take what you want as you want. So for me, personally, I did not like Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. I thought a lot of the dialogue was overwrought and awful. The story was muddled, too difficult. I mean, the fact that the trolley witch, you know, chased Albus and Scorpius onto the roof of the train and then started lobbing pumpkin pasties that turned out to be grenades and then turned her hands into like spears of some
kind.
She's
the Green Goblin.
How was that on stage?
That's what I'm wondering.
I don't know. That I don't know. But, you know, that aspect of it to me is nonsense, right? So I just kind of ignore it. I pretend it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the last season of Roseanne. You know?
Oh, I heard about that. I never stayed with Roseanne long enough to get there.
Yeah, so.
Where she got, like, super rich. And
yeah, they won the lottery or something.
In the
and
final
then,
episode, you found out all of it was fake and, like, John Goodman had been dead for
wait,
years.
Right, what?
And,
oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, the very last episode of Roseanne, it turns out that the last, oh, gosh, I mean, that show was on for, I think, maybe nine seasons.
9 years,
yeah. Yeah, I think it was on 9 seasons. And it effectively, the last episode rewrote it from probably like the third season. Like the two daughters, Darlene and Becky.
Yeah.
Darlene married David, Becky married Mark. It was revealed in the last episode that in fact Becky married David and Darlene married Mark. And then it turned out that Roseanne's sister was actually a lesbian and had been, you know, it just changed
everything.
And so to me,
because Roseanne.
Right, because yeah. Roseanne. And so to me, I'm like, I just pretend it didn't exist because it's really dumb. And I don't like it, I just ignore it.
You think people hate the last Seinfeld?
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say, is how did Seinfeld end?
Oh, yeah, you haven't gotten deep enough into Seinfeld.
No.
Most people hate the last Seinfeld.
Yeah, I've heard it's terrible.
It's like a two-hour clip show, basically, but what happens is they get arrested for, like, for making fun of a victim of a mugging instead of stepping in and helping, and then they bring everybody back from the whole series that they had wronged, and then they show clips of, like, things they, and it ends with them in prison, like the it ends with the four of them in prison. And I think Bill and I were just talking about this, and I actually don't remember if we recorded it or if it was around the podcast we just did, but he was saying it was terrible, and I was saying if it was a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode, you would have loved it.
Yeah,
because people hate Larry more than they ever hated George or Jerry or Kramer.
Yeah,
but it's known as like one of the most reviled season finales ever, but everybody knows about the Roseanne one and nobody talks about it. I think maybe they hate it so much that everyone's doing what you're doing.
But they say John Goodman was in a coma?
No, he, in the series, he had a heart attack at Darlene's wedding or before Darlene's wedding or something. And in the show, he recovered from the heart attack and then cheated on Roseanne. In the last episode of the show, it turns out that he actually died. Right, like from the heart attack. He actually.
So it's
died.
Like Roseanne retconning her own show.
Yeah.
Like nobody cheats on Roseanne.
Jesus.
Yeah. Well, and you look at her career afterwards.
Yeah.
You know.
Just went off the rails.
So that's how you're feeling about Cursed Child? It's the final of the season Roseanne for you?
Yeah. More or less.
Now, how are you feeling about Fantastic Beasts? Now, obviously, you haven't seen it yet, but are you feeling open to that being canon? Or are you going to go in kind of reserved after going through Cursed Child and going, well, this is another thing that's not coming out of JK's books?
I think I'll be reserved for sure, But I think I'm more open to that being canon, and I think the reason is because it exists in the universe, but it doesn't directly interact, or at least I don't think it will, directly interact with the seven books.
It's like it can't, like, affect or change anything, right?
Right, and so the fact that the Cursed Child went back and addressed Goblet of Fire and had impacts on that, and that was kind of the whole impetus for it and everything, that really didn't sit well with me. I think it would have been more effective and better had they just focused on the Albus kids and Scorpius at Hogwarts. That's what I thought they were going to do originally. And
yeah, as I said at the beginning of this podcast, I thought it was going to be about the adult Harry that we saw in the epilogue. I thought we were just going to follow him.
Yeah, and you don't really. And so, you know, that would have been more interesting to me, really, than trying to go back and rehash things that already happened, you know, and mess them up effectively.
It's such a tricky thing when you do that. You do that generational jump in the same universe. As we were just talking about Star Trek on the last episode, Next Generation did that both ways. When they started, the first episode of Next Generation has like a super old Bones in it for one scene. And then one of the earliest episodes, they do the exact same episode as an original series.
Yeah.
Where they encountered the same virus that attacked the old Enterprise. Right. And there's actually a scene where they go on the computer and they're like, oh, it turns out Captain Kirk dealt with this virus. And people hated it.
Yeah.
And then they spent the next 5 years avoiding the original Star Trek completely.
Yeah.
To where they had fights about like, oh, you can't mention Romulans, or you can't mention aliens that were in the old Star Trek because we're trying to stay so far apart.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until they were established on their own, they're like, okay, we'll bring Spock in. We'll bring Scotty in.
Yeah, because I don't mind the...
So you can err on either side.
Yeah, there is a level of like tinkering where stuff like references other things. Like a good example is like, I don't know what it's called. There's a series of Star Wars books, and it follows two stormtroopers around, and it's like a comedy book. And the stormtroopers are...
Is it a comic or is it a novel?
I think it's a comic. I never read any like Star Wars novels. And it's like these two stormtroopers who are in all the significant events of Star Wars.
So it's like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead for Star Wars.
I don't know what that is. What is that?
It's a play that Tom Stoppard wrote about Hamlet. And it's about...
Oh, where it's like two guys in the background of Hamlet.
These two guys that are in like two scenes of Hamlet.
Yeah.
Like they're hired as assassins... they're hired to follow Hamlet around, and then they're going to assassinate him, but they're killed. And it all happens off screen, and you only see them come in. It's like a plot by the king. It's like, yeah. Hey, you two guys, like the bounty hunters in Empire, like you two guys go do this, and then you find out that they're dead.
Right.
And now this plot, this other play, was about what happens to them
behind the scenes.
Behind
of
the scenes.
Bigger...
And it's a very odd, like it's a very 60s experimental play because it's also very meta of about like, there's a lot of discussion of like, are we real people or are we just characters?
Yeah.
And if we're characters, what do we do outside of a play? And they're trying to discover their world.
Yeah.
But so it sounds like that's the inspiration
that,
for this comic.
The guys are originally rebel soldiers. Then they somehow infiltrate the Empire. Then they accidentally become stormtroopers.
Yeah.
Then they're on Hoth. Yeah. It's like,
so they're exploring the universe.
Yeah. And, but it's always like, oh my God, Darth Vader's over there. And it's Darth Vader killing Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, so it's that kind of idea. This book should have just been, this is Harry Potter's kid at Hogwarts, and this is the mischief Harry Potter's kid would get in. Like, Harry's dad got into a lot of trouble when he was at school. Harry got into trouble when he was at school. Right. This is his kid. It's like, that would have been better than trying to rehash this stuff. If in the book they accidentally discover the Chamber of Secrets and they have a different adventure in the Chamber of Secrets, because that's like a thing in the school, I would have been like, okay, cool, a little throwback.
Like, just hit the same locations, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's frustrating that it wasn't its own thing or didn't stand enough on its own and relied so heavily on previous characters
and previous events.
And to the fact that it's muddying up the waters of the original stories.
Right.
And yeah. X-Men would do that all the time.
Constantly. Well, that's like why that time travel in the third Harry Potter book or whatever it is works, is because it takes place in, first of all, its own book. But it services that one particular story. It's not like they went back to the first book.
Right, yeah. It's
the third book.
Scene before.
Right.
They basically do the scene twice in succession.
Yeah. And it's real quick, and it's the scene reads one way the first time you read it and reads the second way the second time you read it, which is really cool. This is just like you said, it's so fan fiction. It's like somebody really wanted Cedric Diggory to live, and it's like,
and it's just, it's absurd because, maybe absurd is not the right word, but it's unfortunate because, you know, one of the main themes in the play was, you know, Harry struggling with, like, fatherhood and, like, being a father. And it's like, all right, if that's one of your main themes, that's fine. Like, go for it. But you don't need to use the time travel to get there. And a lot of it was, like, focused on this relationship between Albus and Harry. Because, you know, Albus becomes, he's sorted into Slytherin. And, you know, there's this whole issue about, like, oh, Slytherin's bad, which, you know, stupid. But I think that you could have had a play that talked about the same issues and you didn't have to muddy the waters with time travel, right, and going, yeah, back to these events that, like, leave them where they are. Leave them be.
Yeah, and it's, like, it's interesting enough. Like, I have 1,000 questions. Like, Hermione's the Minister of Magic. What's Ron's job? What happened to the other Weasleys? Did George grow up okay without Fred or whoever? It's, like, there's a lot of questions I have about what that universe looks like 19 years later.
Right.
Because we grew up with those characters. That's interesting enough without having to be like, okay, that's, here's all the things that happened 19 years later, and here's an alternate future where Cedric Diggory lived and became Voldemort and whatever bullshit they're doing. It's like,
and that was one of the other, you know, things that they didn't take advantage of. You know, in the, in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, you didn't, there, I don't even know if there was a mention of Teddy Lupin. And it's like, well, why not use that character, you know, like, talk about him. You can, there were enough additional characters added. You know, Victoire, I think is how you say Bill's daughter's name. You know, she and Teddy Lupin were like an item. It's like, well, why don't you have them in this new story and, like, let it be about those characters, you know, and you can have Harry, Ron, and Hermione in the periphery.
Right.
They can still be present, but, you know, why not develop new characters a little bit more?
Right. And, you know, that's one of the things that makes Lord of the Rings so successful, and obviously as a movie franchise we've gone backwards.
Yeah.
But, you know, Lord of the Rings was written to be the sequel to The Hobbit, but Bilbo's in, you know, 50 pages out of 1,000.
Yeah.
You know, and Gollum's a bigger character. And I even remember I read The Hobbit first, and then going to Lord of the Rings was, even then, I was a kid, but even then I had fan fiction reaction. I was like, no, the ring just makes you invisible. What do you, it doesn't do this stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, Gollum's just a frog man who lives in a cave. But the story can stand on its own, and it all depends on really how much confidence you have in your new story.
Yeah.
It seems like whenever they start going back and tying everything together, then that's because they don't have confidence in their new characters and they don't have confidence in their new plot. And again, it's always this push and pull, because I can think of lots of sequels. Like Batman Beyond, I was never a big fan of, because I spent that entire series going, well, where's Tim Drake now? Where's Dick Grayson?
Yeah.
Where's, and they didn't want to do that. They wanted to give me Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah.
And I was resistant to that pull, whereas Lord of the Rings is, oh, this is a better story.
Yeah.
So it, again, it's that, it seems like that fine line of like, okay, let's introduce the new era, but let's not even stay in this new era. Let's introduce this new era and then go back.
Go play back.
It's Back to the Future 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It's, I think there's so much more they could have done with it.
Yeah.
And then they just muddled it a lot.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. And it makes it just even more confusing of like where the franchise goes. If the movies are going over here, this play, and who knows if they plan sequels to this play.
Yeah, if this encyclopedia, I mean,
hope not.
This is unprecedented in my memory. I can never think of the next chapter of a book and film franchise.
Yeah. Going to the stage.
Yeah, and I mean, the films are adaptations of the books. This is not the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but that it's on the stage.
Yeah.
You know, Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark was not Spider-Man 4.
Yeah.
So I don't know what this means. Like, were they planning a play franchise?
I don't think so.
You think this is a one-off? I mean, even the book says part 1 and 2, which is weird. Is it just the intermission?
It's because the play is, it's 2 days. It's a 2-day play.
Oh my God, this is really a commitment.
Wait, you have to go to London 2 days and spend your
whole. Well, Because, yeah, it's a two-day play because, I mean, you can read, I read the script in, like, 3 hours.
Yeah, scripts are quick.
Yeah, it's a script. But it's, you know, it takes about 3 hours to read. So I think the play is probably around 4 hours or something. Yeah, I don't know how long it is, but, yeah, they break it up and it's 2 days.
Huh.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's got to be interesting for the actors. You're doing different plays on alternate days.
You're right, but it says, because imagine it's like you do the first play, and it's like, what do they do? Like, lock all the actors in a room so no one gets, like, hit by a car? Do you know what I mean? It's like, what if, like, I got diarrhea the next day and I can't do the play?
Well, I think it's like any other play. I mean, if you're doing one play, you got to do it every day.
Right.
So you also don't want them to get hit by
part one and part two.
But that would be weird if, like, you went to see the first one and you came out and it's like, oh, it's understudies today.
Right.
But like, Harry's this other guy.
Everyone got too hammered at the bar last night after the first play.
They changed the ending.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just feel confused at the end of this.
Yeah, it's like
granted, my synopsis is fairly limited and... Yeah.
Right.
But it's...
I'm still curious. I think I'll still eventually read it. As I said... If they did an audiobook, that would probably be the best for me, because I'm not going to go fly to London and see this over 2 days.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm sure they'll bring it to New York soon. Not that you should fly to New York and see it either.
I mean, if it's that big a hit, if it's that big a hit, it'll come to Chicago eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But who knows? I mean, you know, like Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark never, you know, it didn't do well and it never left New York.
Well, weren't there like fatalities?
No, there weren't fatalities, but people...
There were significant injuries.
A lot of Spider-Men got hurt.
Yeah.
A lot of Spider-Men fell on people.
Yeah.
Although part of me, because I'm being me, I really want to hear the songs. Because, you know, U2 wrote all the songs for that.
U2 did?
Yeah. Yeah. Bono and Edge wrote all the songs for the Spider-Man musical. And part of me thinks it's going to be the Prince Batman album.
Yeah, I bet
because it's going to be like... It's just going to be U2 songs that are kind of about Spider-Man, but kind of about Jesus.
Yeah.
like Prince, all the Prince's songs were kind of about Batman, but kind of about partying.
Right.
Yeah, like Party Man.
Exactly. Right. It's the Prince Batman album. Just, I think we talked about this when Prince died. It's so fascinating to me because Prince seemed to love Batman as much as I did for completely opposite reasons than I do. And I feel like the Spider-Man musical...
Maybe
it should have been a musical.
That
yeah, I thought it was a musical.
No.
Oh, you mean the Harry Potter?
The Harry Potter, yeah.
Sounds like it's a hot mess either way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, okay, the time turning, the time travel, plus like the fatherhood themes, plus trying to cram
alternate
a lot
histories.
Of old, alternate histories, all this stuff. The last thing you need is to try to
make a song,
start singing,
music into there. It's already overflowing with too much.
Yeah, if anyone has seen this, if anyone has gone to London and seen this, please leave us a message on our Facebook page at Caffeinated Comics, or follow me on Twitter at Not At My Book, or leave a comment on caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com on the entry for this podcast, and tell us exactly how they're doing pumpkin bombs and time travel on stage in front of people.
You know, I actually have a friend in DC who went to London to see the play. I just haven't talked to her since she's been back, but I do need to hear how it went.
When you do, I feel like she needs to post.
Right.
Yeah.
Just to tell us how much of a hot mess this looked like on stage.
Well, I think it's possible that the play itself could be very good again. And I think that's a credit to the actors.
And the director.
And the director. And I'm sure there's like really good production value, because obviously there are explosions that need to happen and time travel. Go figure. Yeah. But the story itself, the dialogue, is rough.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. And you never know when you translate something, because the producers... The original movie, we were just talking about it a couple weeks ago when Gene Wilder passed away, I think is the funniest movie ever made.
Yeah.
The musical, which I saw in previews with Matthew Broderick and Nick Lane, one of the greatest musicals I've ever seen. The movie of the musical is terrible.
I like it just because
with
I like
Nathan Lane and Matthew. Yeah, but if you had seen it on stage, you would see how much it was lacking. So you never know about these things. It's possible the play could be great. It's possible it's one of those plays that you you leave out of, and you walk out of there and you go, oh, that was great. And then you start thinking about it.
Right.
Like Star Trek Into Darkness or X-Men Apocalypse, where you're like, ah, I enjoyed that. And then right. you start thinking about the story and you're like, that didn't make any sense.
That wasn't good.
Whereas just reading it in front of you, yeah. that's all you have is really the plot and yeah. the dialogue.
And to be sure, dialogue always sounds better with a British accent. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's
I'm
true.
Sure that helps.
That's yeah. why all our superheroes are British people now.
That's right.
Well, I've done all my plugs. David, is there a way we can follow you online?
I mean, I have a Twitter account, but
go
mostly
ahead.
I just yell at companies.
And if people want to see you yell at companies, it is?
DBrown987, I think.
All right. And Steven?
I'm at 19 South LaGrange Road in Camaras Comics.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!